Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
My name is Zach, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Zach.
Hey, I used to secretary this meeting and used to watch people squirm in this chair. Hi. So, experience, strength, and hope, or what it was like, what happened to what it's like now. So, what it was like was pretty terrifying. I'll skip the childhood stuff. When I was 16, a friend of mine and I decided that it would be pretty cool if we started eating Vicodin recreationally. So that was not cool, as it turned out, but we didn't know that. Or at least we pretended that we didn't know that. But my experiences with alcohol didn't start until I was about 19. And that is when I first experienced the allergy to alcohol, which manifests itself in my life as once I put alcohol in my body, I don't have any control over how much more I put in my body. And then, of course, the mental obsession of forgetting that that happens. So it was really confusing. My first real experience with alcohol was like four beers I had right in a row that I didn't like, and I didn't like the way they made me feel, and I felt stupid doing it, and I'm sure I had something to do that day that I didn't get to do, and the next time the opportunity presented itself to me to do that, I did that again. So it was really confusing, which is terrifying to me, to not know why it is I'm doing something, especially something that affects me so deeply, affects my wits, affects, my mobility, affects my personality, the way I act and speak, and to feel as though I had no control, to not do that. I had no choice, is the way I felt. It is a progressive illness. My illness progressed. I never gave up, until I got sober, I never gave up eating pills, which progressed into snorting heroin. And all the while, alcohol was there. I am originally from Ohio. A little over three years ago, I moved here because I have a brother who lives here. And he said, come on out, and you just need to get away for a while. Which is like such a nice thing to hear when you know that you can take this guy for, when I knew that I could take that guy for at least another year long ride, making him promises about my behavior and what I was going to do when I got here and stuff like that. And I took him for a 2-year ride, at the end of which, he kicked me out, which probably saved my life. I was, drinking a fifth a day or more, and smoking probably an eighth of marijuana a day. I was batshit crazy. The only difference between me and the person on the street jabbering to themselves and arguing with themselves or people who aren't there was I had a house to do it at. That was it. That was the only difference. I smelled the same. I looked the same. It was alcoholism. So I went to a therapist because people with problems go to therapists, right? And my therapist said, he said a lot of my clients find AA to be really helpful. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sure, but, you know. And then, like, It was like that day later or probably the next day. I am a little fuzzy. 4 o'clock rolled around, and that was the time at which I usually really start to get loaded. I'd finish my nerve-calming drinks and start in on the bottle in earnest. And I knew that if I did that, I would have zero chance of going anywhere else after my 2 week stay at the hotel I was at was up, which was paid for. So the only idea I had in my head was AA. So I went to a meeting at Rockridge. Brian met me at the door. Brian is the hand of AA that reached out. And he got me all the phone numbers in the room. He sat with me as I quietly cried. He asked me what I was doing after the meeting was over. What are you doing after this? I said, I don't know. And he's like, well, let's go to another meeting. So we went to Chips and Cake. And he made me take a domino. And my domino was called. It was a whole thing. And after that, I was invited out for fellowship to go get pizza with some guys. And that whole night, people have been telling me, you should really get a sponsor. It would really help. And so I asked one of those guys to be my sponsor. And he's still my sponsor today. I worked the steps with, I still work the steps with him. I'm on 11 right now. I didn't give you my sobriety date, which is May 31st of 2018. So I got about 15 months. More than anything else, I continued with therapy. I checked myself into a program. I needed to be physically separated from drugs and alcohol in order to stay sober long enough to work the steps. But the steps are the things that that actually helped me feel like me and not like a disease incarnate. So if I could tell the newcomer anything, it would be you get a sponsor, work the steps, get as frustrated as you want about it, get as angry as you want about it, talk to your non-AA friends and get angry about it, talk to your AA friends and be frustrated, just keep coming back. That is what is currently working for me. What it's like now is I manage the SLE house that I went into those 15 months ago. I get to leave my front door, which is my bedroom door, every day and offer myself to service to 20 other human beings. Even though I complain about it and I am by no means working a perfect program, I get to do that now. I get to have my brain back, which is a freaking miracle. That above all other gifts is my favorite one, that I think about, as I go to sleep and when I wake up. I don't know, guys. Work the steps, get a sponsor, do the thing. Like, it freaking works. So, I think that's it. That's all I got.
So, hi, my name's Hillary, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Hillary.
It's been a long time since I shared, but I think it came at a pretty good time. Because I've sort of, I've gotten away from going, definitely away from the program. I went to one meeting this week.
Here you go, dear.
Thank you. Oh, thanks.
Thank you, Garcon.
So I have been recently able to get back in touch with an old friend, and he asked me to share, and so I'm here, and I'm showing up, even though stuff's really rough right now, and stuff's beautiful, but it's really rough. So I'll start off by talking about really, I guess, what it was like growing up. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My dad's an alcoholic. My parents provided well for us, and they're good people. But it was very tense at home. My dad is an alcoholic and OCD and a surgeon. So I grew up with him going in and out of programs. And me really, honestly, hating when he was drunk. He wasn't a violent drunk. But I would say I definitely have another disease of codependency. And I found I kind of followed along the footsteps of my older brother and sister. And, you know, I saw my parents party and stuff. And so it was kind of like the next a natural progression, really, for me to just, you know, go ahead and want to drink alcohol, you know, use drugs, whatever. I started early. I guess I got drunk the first time when I was 12. And we smoked pot and weed in the cubby holes at Martin Luther King or whatever. And then it just progressed, you know. We always said then we would never do anything more than smoke weed and drink. But even back then I was blacking out. So I had some other problems before I started drinking and using. And I had anorexia I struggled with. Starting at 11, I matured really early. And I think just drugs and alcohol really relieved my feelings of insecurity. I was extremely insecure. Also just, you know, I tried to control stuff in my environment. So drugs and alcohol were sort of gave me that relief. When I first had my first drink, it was like, you know, like everybody explains here. And it was a relief, like coming home or something, but not coming home, like a home that was like a home, like calmness that I always wanted. So it progressed, and I still, I just used, you know, partying and it was my sort of thing that I would look forward to, you know, alcohol and and trying different drugs. And then so, you know, I had, growing up, starting from really young age, I kind of was, my friends were drug dealers, right? Of course. Or I don't know if that's everybody's experience. That was my experience. And, you know, I would hang out with certain people that, you know, were older. And, you know, I grew up in Berkeley, Oakland, and there were some, you know, people that were in the rap scene, or people that were just, you know, drug dealers, and drug dealers. And so it was free for me. And that was how I preferred it. But it, you know, so, that was kind of the deal. I did go to school. I had to, at home, I had to get a certain level of grade. And I wasn't doing good in junior high, so my parents were like, you can't go to Berkeley High with your friends like I wanted to. you can either go to Maybeck with your brother and sister, because my brother and sister ended up, my brother had to go to Head Roy's and he hated it. So he was able to go to Maybeck after that. And then my sister went to Berkeley High and she was a death rocker, which is pre-goth. And she hated it. She was teased a lot at Berkeley High. So she went to Maybeck. And I was like, no, you know. And I was like, I want to be with my friends. So they're like, or you could go to boarding school. And so I visited boarding school. And the boarding school I chose was called Midland. And it was out in the middle and like San Ynez Valley across from Michael Jackson's ranch. And you know, the reason I picked it is because they were partying, lots of partying when I visited. You know, there was, I got drunk and it was fun and it was, you know, people were, and I had friends there. Actually, my brother's older friends from when we go to West Marin, my parents or my grandparents bought a place in Inverness, and my great grandma, like, it's an old thing, so we go to like Inverness and Point Reyes. I don't know if anybody knows where that is, but it's beautiful, West Marin, and we used to go there summers because my mother is a teacher, so we had the summers off, and we would spend a lot of time going to Inverness, and I made friends. We had lots of friends with people that grew up there. So anyway, so there was a guy there, my older brother's friend, and he was there, and then so I identified it, so I went and I partied, and I said, okay, I want to get away, you know, I'm going to get away from my parents. It was another thing where I wanted independence. So I went away and I did that, and I would come home, and anyway, so I went to boarding school for 2 years. I was still partying there as much as I could, getting in trouble, having to run laps, work laps, working in the kitchen and, you know, doing a lot of chopping. The whole thing that was chop, you know, learn to live with your wants, needs and not your wants. So we had to like chop wood to make fires to heat the water. We had to like basically run the school. I worked in dish house and we did a lot of stuff and it was hard, you know, but I had to make certain grades and I did. And, you know, I had eating disorders along with this, so I was also struggling there. And then I got homesick, I came home, and I ended up going to Maybeck. And Maybeck was, when my brother and sister went, it's a good school. I ended up liking it, and so I graduated from there. And then I really, all through my high school, I wanted, my main thing was, I wanted to get my homework done in class so that I could, you know, do whatever after and drink or use or whatever. And so, you know, that was my motto kind of, but that was my main thing. That was my hobby. And I sort of always knew growing up, I needed a hobby or something or some kind of thing that would give me an identity. And I didn't have that. My identity was, you know, partying and some other stuff. Like I had some depression and I had the eating disorder stuff and I was already, you know, troubled, but alcohol and drugs gave me a relief and, it gave me a scene, you know, it gave me friends and I ended up graduating high school, and I went to Laney, and then I worked at Chevy's, and my high school sweetheart was my boyfriend was I was with the really graffiti artists, and they were so that was kind of what I did and hung around with them when I was that age, and with TDK, I guess they're called now, or KTD, anyway, and I still see some of the graffiti, like, it's probably still, they're still around, but I've lost touch. So anyway, I went there, and then I went to San Francisco State, and I moved to San Francisco, and when I moved to San Francisco, I my partying progressed, and it was progressing more and more. And so I stopped once I moved to San Francisco. I stopped going to San Francisco State. Mm-hmm. I did a good semester there when I still lived at home and my parents down in the garage, and then commuted. And then when I moved to San Francisco, it was kind of, I never went, and I was more and more, just partying. And then, I decided to get a job. I had a friend that from junior high that was like, why don't you become a stripper? It's really easy. And I met another person through this, you know, guy that, anyway, so I just ended up doing that. And, I had to get really drunk at the lap dancing places. So I got really drunk one night. I worked like for a week or something, and I got really drunk one night, and then I blacked out and got in a fight with the door girl. Ended up not keeping that job. And this Elvis impersonator was following me that night when I had all these nicotine patches on, and I came to and in these hot pants and this hospital gown. And my friend picked me up, who lived at, we lived on Divisadero, she lived, you know, with one of the drug dealers I knew from the East Bay. And then he moved in with a guy that was a kind of a higher, more like they, anyway. So she picked me up, brought me back to Divisadero, Hayes and Divisadero. I hung out a lot there in that short period of time. We went to the liquor store there, and the guy would call us cousin. And we'd get our liquor on credit, or like, you know, like, I don't know, we'd pay him back later so we could get liquor whenever. So I used to just I would hang out there, and that was like what I did for a little while. But that was basically, I was doing that and then doing more and more partying, and I'd really kind of getting into like dangerous sort of situations every once in a while. Not, you know, dangerous, because I was basically, it could have been a whole hell of a lot more dangerous for me, I have to admit. But because of who I knew, and I kind of was watched out for, to be totally honest. I was in a bit of a protected situation, in a way, because of, so the city can be small in some ways, you know, anyway, so I, cause like the guy that I was sort of seeing, but not together completely, he would hear about things. Like I would be down in some other area and he would hear about it or whatever. I luckily never, my disease didn't progress to needles. I think that was a little bit conscious on my part, but it was also, I don't know, I didn't go there. Because by the time I was 20, I overdosed, a multi-substance overdose. And I had lack of oxygen to the brain. It was one night, and I had become pretty suicidal, you know, and I would think about, you know, killing myself would make me kind of high. And, I was thinking, you know, my family will be okay with it, and they'll be fine and they'll be better off. And so, I kind of had that in the back of my head. And one night I started going downhill, and I started, feeling bad, and I think I just started taking more and more, because it was like I started off with ecstasy, but then in my blood was also like I had acquired this rest of the bottle of morphine pills from my tweaker friend Tammy, who I would run around the city with and hang out with and, you know, smoke speed, even though I hated it, honestly. Like, I hated staying up really long. She would like get me Valiums or something. Anyway, so So anyway, so I acquired these morphine pills that I would take them alone. I did this a couple times, and of course they would make me sick, and I was just, but I loved it, you know. And I think I took the morphine pills, and I took a lot of other substances, and I ended up, I was about to move from the city because I was on the roof. And I was up there on getting sun, and I threw this book that was a hardcover book on this, and it fell on a pipe and busted a pipe. So they said, you have to move. So I was about to move. And, then this night I hung out with a friend, an old friend that I hadn't. Anyway, so what happened is I was hanging out with a friend, and I started doing substances, and they basically were worried about me or whatever. And I said, I'm fine, just go home. And they're like, somehow got my mom on the phone. Because this night I was with some friends that were old friends that were when I was a little more tame and stuff with my partying. And what happened is I ended up, my dad caught wind. He was on a business trip, and I had talked to my mom, and I said, I don't know what everybody's freaking out about. I took one too many ibuprofens. And so my mom told my dad this when he got home from his business trip, and he raced over to San Francisco to where I was staying and or where I was about to move from, and he rushed me to ICU, and I was in a coma. And he saved my life. Basically, I gave him post-traumatic stress for the rest of his life, but, he saved my life, and I had to relearn how to use my everything. I had to relearn how to do everything over again. My fine motor, my hands were like this. My fine motor was really affected. I had to relearn how to dress myself, you know, go to the bathroom, everything, you name it, I had to do again. Some things were quicker, you know, and I was young, and I was physically in good shape, so I had that on my side. But I have a permanent brain injury, and I have, you know, that's the result of my drugs and alcohol usage. And I'm lucky. I'm lucky verbally, people can't tell. So that's the result of drugs and alcohol. And I came to the program that after that, in that first hospital, you know, I went to an AA meeting, or no, the second hospital, cause I was in ICU and, in St. Mary's in San Francisco. And I just have like foggy memories because I was on an anti-seizure medication. And so I went to my first AA meeting. I was doing a lot of rehabilitation, but I wasn't, you know, I had gone to it because they were suggesting it, you know. It was like, definitely my parents were like, they put me on conservatorship too, like of the person. So I thought I was just going to be able to go back to my old friends and my old ways. And I was sorely mistaken. So I went to a drug and alcohol rehab that was also other stuff too. Like they had people with, it was Port Hueneme, and it was called Steps, I think, or something. Anyway, so I went there, and then what happened? I went to the sober living, and then I was making fun of some lady or something, and then I got kicked out. They wanted to send me, so I got kicked out, and then I wrote a letter, and I was able to come back into the program. Came home and did some more rehabilitation and some stuff for like being really depressed and everything. And I went to groups. I went to some groups and I did some more, PT and ST, you know, which is speech and physical therapy. And then I wrote a letter and I'm like, I want to go back to this recovery place. So I went back to the recovery place, but my parents ended up wanting me to go to this place again for brain rehab. So I got stuck out in the middle of Texas. I got court appointed from the sober place. I got kicked out of sober. I made it to sober living again, and then I got kicked out for another incident. And then they got court appointed. I didn't want to go to this place in Texas, but they court appointed me, and I had to go to this place in Texas, which ended up being like really not good. And I was stuck in this place, and there were like sex offenders across the yard. And then I was in this unit where they drugged me up a bunch because it was, but they only had a small part of it was for drug and alcohol rehab. I went to the wrong place. Anyway, it was the wrong place. So I transferred from there after being there for a few months. Learning how to survive in this unit, you know, with people that had mental illness and stuff. I just dealt with it, and I would bake cookies a lot. and so then my parents visited, and they're like, "Oh, we're so sorry. We didn't know," and they didn't realize I had been giving me this high level of drugs, kind of to sedate me. And so I went over to this other healthcare rehabilitation place, and they did have some stuff that was for brain injury rehabilitation and drug and alcohol, so it was dual. So I went there. Anyway, so let me get to later, because I have a long story, and it's a lot. And so I got to AA, and I started wanting what other people had and the peace that other people had. I relapsed after that initial overdose, and it's a bigger deal because I was doing more damage to an already damaged brain. I had some. My dad would put me back in rehabs after, though. But I honestly, some dangerous things happened to me post head injury. Out there, because it's dangerous out there for a woman and for anybody that's using drugs and alcohol. And if you already have a brain injury, you know, it's I got lost and, you know, just bad. Anyway, so I could either live, and I didn't want, every time I relapsed also, I got further away. I got a little bit of time here. And I worked a program, and I saw, and I had some fellowship, and then I went out, and but I lost a connection with my higher power, and I started finally realizing that I couldn't live unless I stayed here, and I owe my life to this program, and right now, you know, I have a son. I never thought I could. You know, I have a 4-month-old, and he's beautiful, and I'm in a relationship. I got married. You know, being a new mom and being new parents is really, really stressful on a relationship. I have a partner who has a lot of struggles himself in this program. And so I can't control him, and I can't do anything but take care of myself. And this program saved my life. I'm powerless, you know. I have to rely on a power greater than myself, because left to my own, I'm spinning around trying to figure out how to fix everything, how to fix me, how to fix my husband, how to fill a void that's really big, and it can get really lonely in this disease, and really isolating, I've gone through a lot of different things here. It wasn't just the head injury. I started getting this hormonal issue when I was like 29. And I got diagnosed with premenstrual dysphoria disorder. And I would have these 2 weeks where I was okay and 2 weeks where I was like shaking and like so nervous that I couldn't hardly function or make any decisions. And I think that the head injury was something that made it worse, but I got misdiagnosed as bipolar and all this other stuff. And I just had to wait it out almost. Like I went on birth control and that helped for like a year as to suppress it, like taking something all the time. But that stopped working, so I had to learn things like DBT. But nothing I did, I stayed sober. And if I hadn't stayed sober, I would have just definitely been in bad shape. I mean, I have to rely on my support from others, like reaching out to people in these rooms. Reaching out to people in my other program, working the steps. I still say, you know, yeah, I have 18 years. I got sober in 2001, finally for the last time. But I have a long way to go. I think it's a continual journey. And we have to continually check in and find out how we can be a service. That's something that I'm trying to do a little bit more of. I've go to the in between and hopefully I may be able to take a meeting to a woman's recovery home and maybe bring my baby with me. So that it's okay if you know he's fussy or if I have to breastfeed or whatever, and I need something to get me back in the middle because it can get really, you can get away from the herd or whatever, so to speak, and you know, no, I haven't chosen to relapse, but I have like gotten really isolated and that's not helping me any. So, you know, I still struggle with my head injury and that makes things a little more difficult. For a long time, I beat myself over the head because I wasn't doing as much as a lot of people in here were able to do. I had to just sort of talk to other people and realize other people that were understanding and realize that even just sharing in a meeting can be giving something and being of service and getting other volunteers, like not necessarily, it doesn't have to be AA related, to be of service. So I've been able to do that, working with children, being a reading tutor, you know, at being at animal shelters, you know, I'm not the person that's the popular AA-er, you know, that people are like, oh, you know, ask me to sponsor them all the time. But I have been able to sponsor some women, you know. My journey is my journey and your journey is your journey, you know. And I know one thing. I know that picking up drugs or alcohol is not the answer. And the answer is a more spiritual nature. The answer is help is together, is us together. It's not alone. 'Cause, you know, I see others that struggle and they get isolated and they don't do as well. So I choose for me to try and reach out, keep reaching out, because otherwise I'll drown, you know? So I don't have a whole lot more. I guess I have like 10 minutes or whatever, but, or less. 5 minutes. Okay, good. I didn't think I would be able to get through this thing, because as you can see, I'm quite rambling, and I'm not like a lot of other speakers, I'm sure. But it's lack of practice, and it's also I'm very tired from waking up all night and nursing, and also tensions at home. My partner's his grandmother, who was 101, died, and he has to go back to Boston and be in the mess of his family. And so I hope to continue to be able to be of service, and I'm powerless. I have to keep that. That's where I am lately. That's the step that I'm at lately. Powerlessness and surrender. And when I forget it, I'm spinning around in craziness. So I hope that I had something to offer the newcomer, and if I didn't, keep going to a meeting, go to another meeting. You know, there's lots of them, and get fellowship, because I miss fellowshipping, man. It's great. It really is. It's where it's at. Thanks a lot for letting me be of service.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.